2-2 pitch. A swing and a long drive. Deep left. Way back. Gone.
Welcome back to another Baseball America Fantasy Podcast. This is your host, Jeff Ponce, live and direct from Florida. Alongside me is Ian Kundle, stepping in for Dylan today. This is just more of a scheduling thing because I've been bouncing around Florida, had WBC for 3 days, Sunday through Tuesday, you know, hit some backfields on Wednesday on the other side of the state in Fort Myers, staying up in Sarasota, hit the Twins versus Phillies spring breakout yesterday. Ian was also in attendance. We got to see the best of Emmanuel Rodriguez yesterday, Ian, huh?
Yeah, it was I think we got the full Emmanuel Rodriguez experience. The two hardest hit balls of out of the
season. He didn't get hurt.
Well, okay, he didn't get good hurt. Point. Yes,
so you're it was right. It was a premium package, not the deluxe.
We didn't get the triple crown. We only got two of the three. But yeah, he had the two hardest hit balls of any player in the spring breakout game. He had a single at 115.6 and then a triple at 113.2 miles an hour. And then he also struck out twice looking. So, you know, everything we've talked about where he's a little passive at the plate. There's a lot of swing and miss. He had several whiffs in there also. But when he does connect, he can really impact the baseball. And also, I think something that kind of in this, I think, good lead into some of the one of the underrated aspects of his game. We're going to talk about underrated prospects a little bit later, but is his speed. He's actually sneaky fast. And I think you saw it on that triple. Like, once he gets going, he can really run. I think that his speed is just kind of, they've kind of hidden it for the injury reason so far. But it'll be interesting to see if he starts, if he makes the big leagues, if he starts running a little more, because there's definitely some aggressiveness and some base running instincts there.
Yeah, no. I think that from like a fantasy perspective, from like an excitement perspective, just in terms of like watching a game and somebody on a baseball field that can just really flip a game on its head with, you know, a couple of plays, Rodriguez is right up there. Like, there are organizations throughout the game over the last couple of years that have viewed him as, you know, potentially a top 5 to 10 upside type of prospect in the game. And I think you see that, right? Because even the looking strikeouts, right? Like, to justify the approach a little bit, he worked, like, you're not going to see an Emmanuel Rodriguez at bat where he doesn't see like 5 to 6 pitches.
Yeah, right? They're not three pitches.
He works super deep in accounts. Like, he beats up on the opposing pitching staff. And if you give him a cookie, you make a mistake, he's going to jump on it. Like, he is fairly, for a guy who's as passive as he is, he's fairly aggressive on pitches in the zone, which is what leads to some of the whiffs too. Like, he takes big daddy hacks, but it's power, it's angles, and it's plus speed. I mean, when he turned on the Jets there, it was easy to see. Like, there were, you know, after watching the Dominican and Venezuela, there's a little Cunha, like, kind of excitement there on the bases. Like, the helmet flies off. He comes in with a crazy athletic slide. He can play center field. You know, the upside is still there. It's just a matter of him staying on the field. And I think if you're in an OBP league or a points league, I think you can really tolerate some of the whiffs. A batting average league, a standard 5x5, I think he's always going to take a little bit of a hit because he's going to be a weird guy that hits like 220 but has like a 380 OBP because his on-base abilities are so, you know, so extreme. And that's, you know, that really true outcome profile, you know, it's kind of gives and it kind of takes a little bit. But we're not here to talk about Emmanuel Rodriguez, but I think it was both fresh on our minds, and wrote about him this morning, so I wanted to mention it. We're going to go into the NL Central here. If you haven't been following along over the last 4 weeks, we did all the AL divisions. We did the NL East. Next week, we'll finish it off with the NL West. We're starting with the NL Central today. A lot of good organizations here. Mm-hmm. Interesting prospects across the board, I think, particularly at the top. Let's start with the division winners last year in the Milwaukee Brewers. Interesting because they're willing to shake things up a little bit and acquire prospects despite being a perennial contending team. Are they going to win World Series? I don't know if things will shake out in that way, but they're always in the mix for the division. There's very rarely years where the Brewers are bad. And they're buoyed a little bit by some teams in this division, like the Pirates and the Cardinals over the last couple of years, who have been pretty bad, or in the Cardinals' case, kind of trending to bad. And I think we'll probably bottom out this year and next, as they kind of, you know, go full force into a rebuild for the first time in like 60 years. Brewers, though, we do three different categories. If you haven't been following along, our 2026 contributor, highest upside, underrated player. Because I'm the dealer, I'm going to kick it over to Ian. And I'm going to let you pick the first 2026 contributor. Who are you going with for the Brewers?
So this is a tough one because they have a lot of options. Like if you just look in their top 10, you see at least four guys you probably could realistically pick for this. But I'm going to go one of those guys that they acquired this offseason, and that's Jet Williams. And Jet Williams obviously came over in the Freddie Peralta trade. He's been great this spring training. 375 average, 500 OBP, 625 slug. He's got a pair of doubles, a triple, four walks, three strikeouts. Approach metrics look really good. He's hitting the ball hard. The one concern obviously continues to be, you know, how much impact is there going to be? But the reason I'm picking him is the Brewers made that interesting trade a couple weeks ago that we talked about actually on this podcast when they traded Caleb Durbin of the Red Sox. And that opened up an infield spot. And right now they have Joey Ortiz holding it down. And Joey Ortiz is a very good defender. He doesn't add a lot at the plate offensively. And when I look at this Brewers team, I think that what they're missing right now is just an impact player who can play third or shortstop. Jet Williams has the potential to be that player. He's, you know, he's going to be he'll open the season in AAA, but I would not be surprised at all if he's someone that we see up in the big leagues by, you know, maybe end of May, early June, something like that. And I think that he could be a really interesting contributor there. Maybe not in the power category, but I think he's going to add some speed. He's going to get on base, give you runs. Like he might be able to contribute in pretty much any other category.
Yeah, I think that's a really good take. And I think on top of it, he's versatile defensively. I think people have kind of like been like, I don't know if he can play shortstop. I think he can play shortstop well enough that in this infield where they're prone to kind of move guys around, especially if, you know, say Ortiz is slumping or something like that. He can fill in at shortstop. He can play third base. He can play second base. He can play in the outfield. Yep. You could see, you know, time in center field, left field, right field even. They can kind of play him all over the diamond. You know, if he kind of turns into, it's not like for like, but like we'll say a Tommy Edman that's maybe a little bit lighter on the stolen bases and a little bit, maybe a little bit more pop in the bat, especially in that park where the ball can fly and the fences are short and all that sort of good stuff that kind of gets you a couple of wall scraper creepers. I think the numbers could be really good. I think he could be a really productive fantasy player. It's just not a traditional look of like this guy is a shortstop. And I think when you come from like a prospect conversation, that's where a lot of the knocks are. Mm-hmm. But in reality, it's I think, an everyday big leaguer and a guy that can contribute in a bunch of different categories and is going to be really good in an OBP league as well. And these days, I don't know, I find myself playing in points or OBP leagues much more frequently than standard 5x5. I don't want to have to think and be constrained by the concept of batting average. The guy that I wanted to throw out there is another player that they had acquired from the Mets, and that's Brandon Sproat. We saw him up in New York a little bit last year at the end of the season. The stuff is obviously there. It's a very deep arsenal. I think that's something that the Mets did a really good job on, is giving him a few variations of that fastball because the four seam shape isn't good, but it's hard and is useful when it's used with, you know, a cutter and that's harder, a harder slider. You know, a few different breaking ball shakes and some off speeds, and then a good sinker. And I think the introduction of the sinker really allowed him to be a little bit less split heavy in terms of his fastball usage, kind of give different varied looks and moving the ball all over the zone with a lot of power and just like enough strikes, I think can work. He's also a guy that gets a lot of topspin on contact, which is going to lead to weaker contact ground balls. It should be a pretty good defensive infield as well. And it's the Brewers, you know,
yeah.
The Mets are really good at building arsenals. The Brewers and the Brewers to me are almost like the best finishing school mm-hmm. of any of the pitching development organizations, that they take the ball of clay that's already been molded a little bit and they sort of make the little tweaks and pieces, whatever, to make it more stable. And then, you know, it goes right into the mantle of that rotation. And we saw it with Quinn Priester. We've seen it with numerous guys that have come through from them, from their own organization, guys they've acquired that they developed a little bit, like a Freddie Peralta. They have so many of the top 25 to 30 pitchers the last couple of seasons that it's kind of remarkable. And, you know, with the injury to Priester and probably going to be out for the first half of the season, if not most of the first half of the season, there's opportunity here for Sproat to see some starts at some point in the first half. So I think he could be a really good contributor. Let's move on to the highest upside. I think this is an easy one, man. Jesus Made, right? It's Jesus yep. Made. I don't know if you have another name you wanted to throw out there, or if you had anything you wanted to say on Made.
No, I mean, I think he's looked great this spring when he's got into games. He's, you know, the fact that it's kind of crazy what he's been doing at such a young age. The polish is there. I almost wonder if he, you know, looking at the Jackson Chourio approach, would it be crazy to think he could be in the big leagues at some point later this year? I think it's unlikely. And I think next year is more likely.
I think he goes crazy. I mean, like, because that's always what you can't predict. Like,
yeah,
let's say Made goes to AA, right? In the first 3 months of the season, he does something stupid. Like,
yeah,
he's got 18 home runs and 30 steals, and he's hitting 330, right, with like a 400 plus OBP, and they call him up to AAA, and the first 2 weeks in AAA, all he's doing is hitting. I mean, like, you think about, like, Raffy Devers is one that always comes to mind. Remember, like, how crazy he went in Portland? They called him up to Pawtucket for, like, a week and a half, and it was like, all right, like.
Well, there's no point.
We don't care if the defense is iffy. He's coming up. He's, you know, he's going to be in the big leagues. And he never went back down. And Made is that kind of a talent. When we're talking about the elite players, the guys in the top 10 to 15 prospects, if those guys perform in the first half of the season and really push the team, they get up to the big leagues and they never go down. Yeah. He's got that kind of upside. I would put it below a 50% probability.
Though. Oh, agree.
I mean, like, it's probably more like a 25% that happens. Like, he could still be really good and finish the season in AAA.
Yeah. I mean, that's crazy that we're going to
do 40-man management, all that sort of thing.
It's crazy, though, that we're even suggesting there's a 25% chance for a kid who's, you know, 18 right now. But, I mean, he's getting a ton of run this spring. You know, spring training numbers, obviously, grain of salt. But he's hitting 310 with a 355 OBP. The EVs look good. Max of 110.7. His 90th is 106.8 this spring, which, if you're a big leaguer, you're happy about that. Oh, wait, he's 18. So, yeah, I mean, I think the sky's the limit here. And, obviously, you know, Connor Griffin, Kevin McGonigal, top two prospects in baseball. Like, Made's not that far behind them, I think, in third. And, you know, this could be the season where he really just establishes himself, that maybe he does even is not a tier below them. Maybe he belongs in a tier up closer to them than we realize.
Yeah, I think that's true. Other name that you had listed for highest ups event to go into is Bishop Letson. Good extension, good stuff. Another one of these Brewers pitching prospects where you can kind of look at it a little bit and dream that, like, all right, this could turn, you know, into something kind of interesting. So we'll see.
He's way up stay, spring.
Yeah, the stuff's up. He's just got to stay healthy. If he stays healthy, I think that he can easily be a top 100 prospect by June, July. All right, let's talk about underrated players here. I'll kick it over to you for first pick. I have my guy that I'll go into, longtime fan of my guy.
Yeah, my choice was Josh Adamczewski. I definitely just butchered that name.
Adamczewski.
Adamczewski. We're gonna try,
like,
that
Mike
again.
Adamczewski.
I just think there's really interesting metrics here. Like, takes good at bats, really good approach. I showed that off this spring too. Carryover of what he did last year in the minors. EVs are solid, and I think that one of the reasons he's a little down prospect list is defense. We don't really care about defense in fantasy. As long as he can get on the field, then I think there's enough offensive upside to get on the field. So I think he's someone that you might be able to get at a kind of like a lower price than the talent warrants with his offensive ability.
Yeah, I agree with that. Name I'm going to throw out there is Brock Wilkin. I know Brock from his time on the Cape. I would say, like, on a personal level, probably one of my favorite people in baseball and players. Has had just a rough string of injuries, you know, got hit in the face and had some eyesight stuff that he had to work back from. Literally had to go. I wrote a story about it last year about you know, sort of his off season and some of the things he had to do to sort of like train his eyes to get back to where they were, like actually did like rehab for his vision, which was kind of interesting. And then this year, having an awesome first half, I think some of the vision stuff, like in terms of his contact, the swing and miss, that stuff had improved. And talking to him at that point in time, he kind of had mentioned that he was seeing the ball better than he had ever seen it before in his life. They went at first half championship, and he's, you know, with Biloxi, he's celebrating with the team and ends up getting injured. And just like an unfortunate sort of thing, but the performance really stood out last year in terms of he was getting to the power consistently in a place that's really hard to hit for power. The Southern League saps home runs. You know, there's a marine layer there. It's heavier air. There's more drag on the ball. You just look historically, it's one of the toughest places to hit. He was performing there. Like I said, strikeout rate was at a very tolerable rate. I think he's a guy that could bust out this year and maybe even get up to the big leagues. Will be sort of interesting to see what direction this all goes. But I think the power is still there. And even like the defense seemed to be a little bit better last year. He was moving a little better. So we'll be interesting to see how he comes back from injury again. But kind of just some really freak things that aren't common, you know, getting hit in the face in a way that causes some sort of vision stuff and then getting hurt while celebrating, which we've seen happen. But always really unfortunate when that comes to fruition. All right, let's move on to the Chicago Cubs. This is an organization that I cover. I'll bat first on the 2026 contributor here. We're going to go with Moises Ballesteros. I actually got to see him for a few major league games last year in Pittsburgh when I was swinging through in the fall. Hit an absolutely monster home run off of Johan Oviedo. I think it was maybe like 113 and nearly left PNC Park. Like, it was a bomb. He doesn't get to that all the time, but I think that's lurking there. Like, the bat speed, his high end bat speed when he really explodes is there. It's just, he's such a contact hitter, a professional hitter, that he doesn't unleash that all the time. I think the bat can still work. He's just so young, and it's just, how does he fit into this Cubs picture? You know, is he their everyday DH? I don't know. So I do think that he will contribute at some point because there's going to be injuries. Something's going to get shuffled around and, you know, he could get every day at bats. I'm just a little wary of like what it's going to be like over the first month, maybe 2 months of the season. I don't know if you have a Moises Ballesteros taking.
No, I so apologies. My computer was, we're on Airbnb internet here. So it's a little tricky at times. I like Ballesteros a lot. I think that there's a really good combination of hitting ability and on base, and then he's got a little bit of pop. And it looks like he's had a great spring. And after being delayed a little bit through some, I think it was some visa issues, but he looks like he's going to probably be at least a platoon DH to start the year. It'll be interesting. I think the one holdup I have with him in fantasy is he going to qualify at catcher? And I think there's a pretty big value swing there if he qualifies at catcher versus if he ends up being like util only or maybe first base. Because if he can qualify at catcher, even get, you know, 20 games there, that really raises his ceiling, I think, in fantasy terms.
I mean, if he's 100%, and I think there's a good chance that he makes the team out of camp. If he makes the team out of camp, I don't think it's crazy that he could see, you know, maybe like one start back there a week. So it will take a month or two, but I could see, I don't think they're all the way gone on him catching. And I think they like having that flexibility and versatility. Like, they'll pick whoever it is in the rotation that it's probably not going to be like Edward Cabrera, you know, somebody hard to catch, probably not. But like, he certainly has thrown to Cade Horton before. So
yeah.
You know, maybe they make him like Horton's personal catcher and he catches for six innings and then moves to DH, and they, you know, they put in Carson Kelly or Amaya. I've always sort of gotten the feedback that, no, we're not like, you know, we're not just going to kill catching with this guy. And he's so young. I mean, he's 22. it takes catchers a while to learn the position professionally, even when they're good defensive catchers in college. Like a Shea Lang Lears was a phenomenal defensive catcher at Baylor and then gets into pro ball and was just kind of okay. And there were things that he had to work on, and he's a solid everyday defensive catcher now in the big leagues, but he's not elite. Like it's a position that you have to learn the pro game. And handling pro pitching staffs, because you're just seeing a level of stuff and performance and asked to do and tasked with a lot more. Now, calling games and that sort of thing is you know, seems to be going away and is going to end up in the dugout, but which may, and maybe with the challenge system and the AutoZone and stuff, maybe that opens up an opportunity for a guy like Ballesteros, who does have a good arm. So, mm-hmm. We'll be interesting to see where that goes. Did you want to bring up Jackson Wiggins as a potential performer as well?
Yeah, I just think that I look at this Cubs rotation. Jameson Taillon has really struggled this spring. He's old. Matthew Boyd is also, you know, old and has had some injury issues. Wiggins is in his Rule 5 year, so there's no reason not to, if they need to go to a starter, at him. If they're going for upside, and, you know, I don't know. I don't think it'll be out of the gate because they have Ben Brown also on the 40-man roster, or who's on the 40-man roster right now. But if it gets into the summer and they're looking for a ceiling raiser in that rotation, especially if they have some injuries, I just don't see a ton of pitching depth. I think Wiggins could easily pitch his way into consideration for a call-up at some point this season.
I agree with that. Let's talk a little bit about highest upside. Who's your first pick there, Ian?
I'm going to have to go with Ethan Conrad, who I know was an FYPD favorite of yours. But, you know, this is a tricky one because he's been hurt. And so we don't really know what it's going to look like. I don't believe he's played yet this spring either. So we're still kind of wait and see mode. But
no, they said he's delayed.
Is he delayed? Okay.
Playing games until like maybe a little bit later. I have to double check on that. But I thought it was maybe like late April or early June. Like yeah. He may end up playing in complex and then going to a full season level, which I'm surprised by, unless there was something that happened in the offseason. I'll have to get more information on that, because he was swinging a bat and hitting in like the fall.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, I just think the offensive upside there is substantial. But it's a wait and see right now, just because, as you said, you know, he's not playing right now. He's probably not going to play for a little bit longer. But I think when he gets on the field, he's someone that, you know, size is there. He was a first round pick for a reason. Was really breaking out at Wake Forest, obviously, before his injury. And I think that, this is the type of guy, when you're looking for an outfield prospect, this is when I'm going for ceiling, he's the type of profile I'm targeting.
Yeah, I agree with that pick. I think maybe Jefferson Rojas is another option, but I don't know if the upside is like crazy with Rojas. I think he'd just be like a very good kind of all around player, or could just end up like a bench guy, you know?
Yeah.
We'll see. Underrated player. Let's move on to that one. You got two favorites here of mine in Cain Kepley, who I really think could break out this year, especially if like it's funny that the high end EVs are not crazy. Like he's not a guy that's going to blow up your 90th percentile. It's pretty good, not bad. But he's one of these guys that like he hits a ton of balls between like 85 and like 100, you know? So there's a lot of consistent hard contact, you know? Okay, 89-mile-per-hour line drive isn't technically a hard hit ball. It's a harder hit ball. It's not soft. It's the high end of medium, right? He just kind of like peppers line drives all over the field. He's added a little bit more power this offseason, it seems. Like some of the reports I've seen is that he's been driving the ball a little bit more. There's a ton of speed here. He's a winning, heady ball player that does a lot of things really well. It's good approach, good enough contact. And he's a guy that could steal like 30 plus bags. So, you know, I could see this being like a turbo Caleb Durbin type of profile in center field, right? Where it's like the contact guy that's like pesky, but will sneak a little pull side home run every so often, you know, hit some doubles, steal some bags, you know, and of course he's got the plus defense in center field. So, I'm a fan of Cain Kepley. I almost feel like he could maybe even be considered within the highest upside guys.
Yeah,
Kevin Alcantara is maybe another one.
Yeah, I like that pick a lot. I also think it's Chicago in the summer when the wind's blowing out. Like he's got plenty of power to play into that. So could definitely raise his offensive or ceiling there. My choice is Cole Mathis, who is a he's a corner infield prospect who his biggest issue has just been he's hurt. Cubs drafted him in the second round of 2024. He's a two-way player in college, and he had to have Tommy John surgery after signing. So that kept him out. And then he got hurt again after coming back in 2025 with a right elbow sprain. So a couple of arm injuries. So he's barely played since he was drafted. He went to the AFL last year, played pretty well there, hit 280, 439, 400 slug in 66 plate appearances. But I just think that the combination of hit tool and power potential is there. The EVs were good upon his return, which is encouraging to see after a couple of arm injuries. You know, his plus raw power, he's got good contact skills, and he has a good approach. And I think that, you know, this is someone who, when you go back to when he was in college, like, was seen as a potentially high-end offensive prospect, and we just haven't had a chance to see it now. So I think he's someone that that could have a breakout season, and who I really like the offensive potential here for 2026.
Yeah, I love McCole, guy that played, you know, at Kituit, had a phenomenal summer, might have set the single season home run record for Kituit a couple of years ago when the ball was flying out in the Cape Cod League. He's an underrated athlete. He's actually someone who tested really, really well as a plus athlete. I don't know if that ever translates to defense. I've kind of wondered if maybe he could end up a corner outfield guy and be like a pretty good right fielder, almost like Adam Duvall-ish kind of a profile. Like, that's really what that's the comp that I would put on Cole Mathis. Because he's got that power like Duvall had, kind of an interesting approach, injury concerns like Duvall had, and is a better outfielder than people realize because he was a third baseman and yada, 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 but was a two-way guy. I've always kind of been intrigued by the idea of maybe he's a 40, 45 runner, but like his routes, if you get his routes good enough, the arm is good enough, you know, maybe that could all work out. And he's maybe a above average runner once he's underway. All right, let's move on to the show here. All right. The Pittsburgh Pirates, 2026 contributor, highest upside. Let's be frank. It's Connor Griffin.
Yeah.
We don't have to go into a big tirade here about how good Connor Griffin is. I think everybody out there knows this is maybe the highest upside prospect that I've covered, going back to like Acuna and Tatis. Like, it's like that, you know, I think he's special. So we'll see if it comes to fruition or if we're eating a whole bunch of crow in a year. But I think he's going to be a big deal. So who's another 2026 contributor with the Pirates? Because they have an interesting youth movement that's been going on for a few years here.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, they got obviously Griffin's coming, but I think they have a lot of pitchers that are interesting. You easily, I think, could have picked Hunter Barco for this, or I don't think he has rookie eligibility still, but Braxton Ashcraft is another one. But I'm going to go with Bubba Chandler. And Bubba Chandler, I feel like we've been waiting for this for several years now, and it keeps kind of stopping and starting for various reasons. But there's a clear lane to a rotation spot on opening day this year. I know he's had his ups and downs in the spring. There's still some concerns about the control. But his stuff when he's on is electric. You know, he can miss bats. He's got multiple pitches and that you least plus. And I just think that it's make or break time where he's going to be in the rotation. Now let's see what he's got. And if things break right, you know, this is a guy who could easily establish himself as kind of what the Pirates have been looking for at that number two starter behind Paul Skeens. You know, it might take a few years to get there, but the raw talent is there. And it's just a matter of, how long is it going to take? And is he going to be able to stay healthy? Because he has had some injury concerns in the past.
Yeah, I think, that's probably a good one. Highest upside outside of Connor Griffin.
Yeah.
For me, I want to say it might even be Seth Hernandez. Like, his stuff apparently looked insane the other day when Josh saw him. If he's throwing strikes and he's just competing in the zone and working both sides of the plate like it looked like in that video, you know, bien suerte, man. Good luck. Good luck with that one. Did you want to mention another hitter here? Because I do think there's somebody else kind of lurking in this system that's of note. Yeah.
I'm surprised you didn't take him because I know this is your guy, Eduardo Florentino. Edward Florentino, excuse me. Unfortunately, he's not playing right now, which I think is part of why he's a little out of sight, out of mind, because he's not on their spring breakout race roster right now. But the offensive upside here is just tantalizing. Like, this is a guy who the EVs he put up last year at his age were just remarkable. And I think that, you know, once he gets back on the field this year, it could be, I mean, he's already, you know, one of the top prospects in baseball, but the ceiling is even higher there. And it's just a matter of basically just getting back on the field. It's kind of crazy that the Pirates have as much. I mean, it's not crazy given they've struggled, but the young talent they have coming through, it's just, I think it's kind of the inverse of what we were talking about with a few other systems in this, where it's like hard to find someone with ceiling. They have so many guys with just huge. Like, you could put Bubba Chandler in this. You could, obviously, Connor Griffin is the easiest choice, but there's two more right here. Like, there's even some other guys further down the list that you could argue with for top, for high ceiling. But yeah, Florentino is someone that I just really like the offensive potential for. And it's just a matter of, you know, getting on the field now this year.
Yeah, no, I think that's true. And I'm going to kick it back to you for underrated prospect. You had an interesting pitching name that you had listed here. We should talk a little bit about that, and we'll move on, take a little break, and then we'll move on to our final two systems.
Yeah, I just think it's Reynald Navarro. He's someone who I believe Josh saw him recently. And this is another guy where it's, you know, extreme risk. But if things break right, there's a lot to like here. He's a left-handed pitcher. He is still super young. Like, he was, he was born in 2006, signed in 2004. It's a huge fastball. It's a big breaking ball. There's no control. And if he can start throwing strikes, I mean, last year was 40 walks and 32 innings, but he threw strikes when Josh saw him this spring. And if that carries over to the regular season, like, this is the kind of arsenal that can really shoot up the rankings very quickly, because he's going to really pop in those stuff models. And yeah, if he can cut down, as I said, 40 over a walk and inning last year. So you can't really get worse than that. So if he can just cut that walk rate, even, you know, down, maybe this year you get down below 20%, the year after you get down below 15%, incremental progress, like, the sky's the limit here with this type of arm. You know, it's not a lot of guys who can combine the fastball and breaking ball capacity that he has.
No, I think you're totally right about that. He's a really interesting one to watch. And frankly, the Pirates have done some really good things in the pitching side the last few years. They deserve credit. I think people want to poo-poo the whole Paul Skenes thing because he was highly rated. That's not the same guy. Like, when you started digging some of the numbers, like, they lowered the arm slot, and I don't know if it was all of them, but like, the slot change, and he was with Wes Johnson before that. I mean, he was with a legitimate MLB pitching coach.
Fastball shape,
they added that splinker, which has become a huge part of his arsenal. I just saw him again the other day against the Dominican Republic. Looked phenomenal. I mean, like, they deserve some credit there. They deserve some credit for turning a two-way guy like Bubba Chandler, which is always a really risky kind of pick that can go a lot of different ways, turning him into what he's become, and several others. So credit to them, and I'm interested to see where this can go with Reynald Navarro. All right, let's take a quick break here. When we come back, we're going to talk Cincinnati Reds. We're going to talk a little St. Louis Cardinals. It's the Fantasy Podcast. We'll be right back. All right, and we are back. Fantasy Podcast, Jeff Ponte and Kundal, Baseball America. We're talking the NL Central. We've already gone through the Brewers, the Cubs, the Pirates. We're moving on to the Reds. I think the 2026 contributor is probably pretty easy here. There's a couple to pick from. Who's your pick, Ian?
Yeah, I think the obvious one is Sal Stewart. Stewart, he can just really hit. And I know there's some question about where his ultimate defensive home is, but again, as long as he can get on the field in fantasy baseball, we don't care about that. So I think he's got the offensive upside where I don't think it really matters. This is a guy who potential plus to better hit tool, above average power. You know, it might not look pretty, but when he gets out there physically, but when he gets out there, he just hits. And I think we're going to see that this year. And I think he's going to be a key contributor in the Reds lineup for the season.
Yeah, I think you're right. The other name that I would call out is Rhett Lauder. I think he's now in the mix for some starts potentially. I think maybe Chase Petty might be in the mix for some starts, especially with Hunter Green going down. They do have some pitching depth, but that's a big one. And, you know, Lauder, you know, for some of his flaws, maybe a little bit of lack of stuff, like, he's not my favorite arm. You know, just pitching prospects sort of generally, it's not the style of player I go for. I do think he can be a good contributor, can go deep in the starts, especially like a quality start type of league. I think he can probably provide some decent value. So that'll be interesting. Let's move on to highest upside. This is a really fun conversation with this particular organization because they have some guys you can really dream on. One of them for me is Steele Hall, one of the best athletes in the class. There's a ton of upside here. One of the comps that I got from evaluators out there that are fans was Trey Turner. That, like, if this goes right, this could be Trey Turner kind of an upside. I think that gets you out of the bed in the morning if you're a fantasy owner. So definitely a name that people knew in FYP. He was a top 10 pick. This is no shock. But there's other guys too. So who are you going to go with here for, you know, highest upside with the Reds organization here?
Yeah, I think for me, Tyson Lewis is that guy. And he's someone, if you go in the prospect handbook, he was voted best power hitter in the organization. And when you look at his EVs, it's easy to see why. He had the highest 90th percentile exit velocity in the system, max EV of 119 as a 19-year-old. And I know just talking to some scouts this offseason, his name came up a few times as someone who can jump into the top 100 pretty quickly in this season and in 2026. And the big thing with him is just going to be the contact skills. Like last year, chase rate was high. In zone whiff rate was high. Just across the board, it was high. But he's young. He was 19 years old. If he can take a step forward in those areas, I think that the impact potential is enormous here. And this is the type of guy that, you know, if you're really swinging for the fences or you're in a rebuild, I would be very interested in targeting because I think that you could get him as, you know, maybe not even the lead piece in a deal. But if he breaks out like he has the potential to, it's going to be – he could be a key contributor for the future when you're if you're a rebuilding team.
Yeah, it's just two really exciting players, guys that you want to roster all over the place. Let's jump into underrated player, Ian. Who was your pick for underrated player in the system?
Yeah, he's actually someone who he homered in the spring breakout game yesterday, and that's Hector Rodriguez. And I think he also could have been a pick for the closest to the big leagues or big league contributor this year because he's going to start the season in AAA, but he's an undersized left-handed hitter, outfielder. He's listed at 5'10", 200, but it's really good approach metrics, and I think that he can just hit. And, you know, defense maybe is a question mark, but the Reds have some room in the outfield. Like, this isn't, you know, this is, I think, one of the areas that there could be an opening, a lane for him to get up there this year. And he's just, if he continues to hit like he has the past couple of years, you know, you could be a guy above average hit tool, above average speed, maybe fringy power. Like, that's a guy who can be a solid contributor, especially if he's going to run a high OBP and continue to show the approach ability, or excuse me, the command of the strike zone that he did last season.
Yeah, I think he's a great call out here and somebody that you're right. Like, I think particularly in 5x5 standard leagues, he's going to be a fun one because he's going to hit for average because it's like a hyper aggressive approach, right?
Yeah, the contact rate is insane. It's just the chase is elevated. But if he makes contact, you know, early.
Yeah, and he catches barrels. He catches barrels. Like, yeah, you know, so there's some give and some take with this player, but like, he's got enough power and like enough twitch that it all can kind of still work. So I think he's an interesting call out. He's a good one. Guy that I wanted to just throw out here, who's a really good athlete that came out in the 2024 draft, was Eli Pitts. You know, the upside is pretty big, you know, just in terms of like, well, excuse me, of 2025 draft. I'm wrong. You know, he's a name that I really like this year in FYPD. There's speed, there's upside. We'll see more of it this year. We haven't seen it yet as a professional, but a name to sort of know. And I think a guy that, you know, we're talking a year from now could be maybe in the conversation for highest upside because of some of the tools and stuff that he has. The Reds have done a really good job of targeting big tools recently and kind of dig that. All right, let's move on to the Cardinals here. Kind of wrap this show up. JJ Weatherholt, it's kind of like Connor Griffin. I think we know he's going to be the easiest 2026 contributor to bank on.
Yep.
Quinn Matthews is kind of in the conversation as well. But JJ can hit. JJ can play a bunch of different spots. There's more power there. He's showing more power. Tough part to hit for power in, but I think he'll get his numbers. He'll get his stolen bases. I think he could be a, you know, how high is the upside? We'll see. You know, in a better park, in a better lineup, I think the numbers could be bigger. I think he maybe could get into, there's maybe MVP upside here, but it needs to sort of just grow and continue to expand with the power. He does so many things well on a baseball field. Quinn Matthews, to me, I think is like a back end starter. The stuff seems to be back a little bit this spring. So, you know, hopefully he can kind of get back on track after kind of missing most of last year. Highest upside. There's a couple of good names here, Ian. Who did you want to mention?
I'm going to leave you. Well, I guess since you have the Cardinal system, I guess
you can talk about both of them. Yeah.
But yeah, I think Raynel Rodriguez, just the offensive upside here is immense. You know, this is a guy at 18 years old, 104.8, 90th percentile exit velocity, 113.4 max. Good, like, doesn't chase that much. Good contact rates. I know, like, during the top 100 process, he was someone a lot of scouts were saying that is a good one to push a little higher because the offensive upside is that high. And yeah, I just think that if you're going just strictly on offensive upside in this system, you could probably make a case that he might have more than JJ Weatherholt. Like, he's not going to steal bases, but the hit power combination here is just unique for a teenager. And I just think that he. The ceiling here, especially since I think he, and you probably have a better handle on this than I do, I think he's got a decent chance to stay a catcher too. If he can stay a catcher, like, there's not going to be a lot of guys who can match his hit power combination.
Yeah. No, agree there. Josh Bye is another one to call out. Had a huge home run yesterday. Yeah, I mean, the power's there, the speed's there. He's hitting more. I just think, like, whatever he did in the offseason at the end of 2024 really just kind of trampolined him going forward, and the tools, everything hit, everything we thought that he could be in terms of the upside, he's kind of growing into. And he was out in the woods for a while. It's another good example of sometimes, you know, you don't want to fully quit on the guy with the loud tools and upside. But yeah, that bias is there. Underrated guy. I'm going to throw out another player from Massachusetts, and that's Daniel Ortiz. Kind of a find for them in the later rounds a couple years ago. The bat to ball skills are very fringy, but he's got good approach, can play a few different positions, not all that well, but maybe competently, runs a little bit. There's really good power and angles. That's what I'm buying into here. I think he's kind of an underrated guy in a really talented Cardinals farm system. Mm-hmm. All right, Ian, just in the nick of time, about 45 minutes in, exactly what we set out to do. We've gone through the entire NL Central, talked about a whole bunch of prospects here. Hope that all those that are out there enjoy. For Jeff, for Ian, this has been the Baseball.